Welcome, everyone, to KTWHLP, Two Harbors Community Radio, 99.5 on your dial, ktwh.org on your streaming device, bringing you this week's stories behind the stories in the Lake County Press with editor Kitty Mayo. Good morning, Kitty. How are you on this really swell day?
I'm good, Tom. Thanks.
Wonderful. Why don't we start right out? Are you ready to Urho? St. Urho's Day celebration kicks off in Finland.
Isn't this exciting? So those of us who live close to the North Shore probably are aware that St. Urho's Day is coming up, and it's usually the weekend closest to St. Patrick's Day. So that's this coming up weekend, starting on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I guess this will air on Friday, and things will already be getting off to a start. St. Urho, as most people know, isn't like a fully fictional character, but he is in the sense of the holiday that's been built around him in the U.S. for places that often have people living there with a Finnish descent. So the saint who drove the grasshoppers out of Finland and saved the grape crop, that was the big thing, because we want to make sure we save the grapes. In any event, I got to interview Heather Svay, who has been a longtime member of the committee for St. Urho's Day. She grew up in Finland. Now she lives in Isabella, and she's continuing on this really great tradition. If anyone knows the Beaver Bay car, it's sort of being celebrated as this heap. It's a Cadillac Coupe de Ville of an old vintage, and it's painted a different color every year, and it's a real anybody's guess whether it's going to make it through the parade or not. So Heather was really excited to buy the car from Ellie Corpy, who started this tradition in 1999. And this car has seen the Finland parade every year since 1999. By the way, we're at our 48th annual St. Urho's celebration up in Finland, Minnesota. So, and I also talked to Anna Schaland, who is part of that committee and sort of the revival of St. Urho's Day and the plan around the parade on Saturday. And I asked her, why do you do it? Why do you do it? It's a lot of work, and all thousands of people come from all over, kind of crowd in to enjoy the party. And she said, it's for the fun. She said, this time of year can be, what did she call it? The cranky time of year when we really begin to doubt whether we're going to make it out till some green grass and some real sunshine and warmth.
Oh, sure.
And she said, it's a good reminder to come together as a community and have some fun. And laugh, and this is sort of, the whole thing's sort of a fun joke, basically, that you can participate in. You have the Miss Helmy contest, a very special kind of beauty competition, and all kinds of fun hijinks going on throughout the whole weekend, Tom.
Oh, yes. I think the Miss Helmy contest would be illegal in Florida now, so it's bound to be very popular. In the Greenland Chronicles, the sagas, everybody was indoors all winter, including the livestock, and they let them out in the spring, and everybody just kind of goes crazy. Well, this is a way of letting off steam, you bet.
Exactly.
And Finns from Finland are a little bit puzzled at this celebration, especially with the name Urho, because there is a notorious Finnish fascist whose name was Urho, and they're wondering why we're celebrating Urho Kekkonen. Well, we're not. We're celebrating St. Urho.
Nice, thank you.
Minnesota boy. Yes. Yeah. Well, as long as we're up the shore here a ways, let's talk about Silver Bay beginning their stormwater management planning.
Indeed. So this came from their regular council meeting just this last Monday, which I attended remotely. And it is a plan being set forth, being worked on currently, and it's in its draft form, certainly, by the city's engineering firm, Bolton & Mank. And the individual who has been working on it, made the presentation, is Derek Benoit, who also works for Bolton & Mank. And I'd like to tell people, because I don't think everyone knows this, Tom, I know you do, but both Two Harbors and Silver Bay have an engineering firm that they have a contract with. In this case, it happens to be Bolton and Mink for both cities. And they provide a lot of really valuable planning and documentation that's necessary, as well as all the sorts of things. You could probably say more about it. I just am grabbing a teachable moment here because I don't think people realize what that relationship is. Bolton and Mink has been the the company, the engineer firm for both these cities, all the while that I've been writing about city business. And they're super important to the functioning and growth and health of both the city, certainly in their infrastructure. So in this case, they're working on a stormwater management plan. There's come to be in the world an understanding that if you create a plan that is well thought out and documented, that you can then apply for funding that may be free money, as I like to call it, grants, this sort of thing through different entities. So they're looking at sort of their long-term needs, what size culverts they should be planning for as larger rainfall events and more intense rainfall events, which can cause flooding, are predicted by NOAA, the National Weather. Oh, geez, now I got to try and remember what NOAA stands for. Can you help me out, Tom? National
Atmospheric Association.
Oceanic and Atmospheric Association. I like the way you slurred through that. Yeah. Okay. So we got NOAA down. So NOAA is predicting for our region, specifically for Silver Bay, larger rain events. That means flooding. And one of the counselors asked, well, I know that culvert. I know that street. I don't very often see flooding there. And what was pointed out by Joe Rund, one of the city engineers, said, you might not see it. It could be flooding upstream. It might not necessarily be going right over the street, but cutting deeper into areas with soil and causing damage that way, and more erosion and upland of there's some nature. And he said, you know, you could begin to do damage to some of the trees and your green space and that kind of stuff. So those are some of the things they're looking at and puzzling through as they try to make a real comprehensive, like, long-term plan, forward-looking. It's the sort of thing that as they plan to do street repairs or street improvements or street replacements, that this would kind of get built into there and start looking at funding for it. You know, down the road stuff, as we well know in Two Harbors, that stuff can take a long time to get done. And if you don't have a plan in some way that you're going to manage, you're going to have a real problem. I'm thrilled about this. I might sound like I'm making a big deal out of nothing, but for as long as I have been a journalist, which is a little over 10 years, I've been interviewing people and learning about climate change and how it's going to impact those of us who live here in the North Shore. And these larger rain events and unpredictable rain events are really going to be our biggest impact that could cost us a lot of money and do property damage. So some of the negative impacts of climate change for us specifically. And the way we can adapt to that is going to be exactly doing things like this, stormwater management. So I'm really pleased to see that they're looking ahead and trying to be proactive on some of these things.
Oh, yes. And because we live where we live, we are the default stewards of our portion of Lake Superior and the watershed that feeds it. And as for these changes in our weather, this is all part of the global warming phenomenon that we're seeing. It is not the rising ambient temperature that's the big deal with global warming. It's that our atmosphere is an energy machine. And when you add more energy to it by having it just 1 or 2 degrees warmer, everything happens more and faster. The winds are windier, the rains are rainier, the snows are snowier. And so we are seeing weather that we have not seen before because it is a weather machine that is amped up now, and it's making things happen that have not happened before. And these torrential rains are part of it.
Indeed.
But enough of the mini sermon from Mr. Science there. Our next piece here is a book review by Christina Raffin, Making the Carry, by Tim Cochrane of Cook County. And so do tell, Making the Carry, it sounds like a portage kind of a thing going on.
You got it. Making the Carry is indeed a portage reference, and in this case specifically referring from moving cargo or a boat or canoe between two bodies of water. That's what Making the Carry is. It's an old Voyager sort of term there. Christina read this book. We were lucky enough to get an advanced copy of it and did a really wonderful review. I loved her write-up. I already knew I wanted to read the book because Tim Cochrane is, I'm a big fan. He is a historian. He is somebody who's been living near the Grand Portage, Grand Marais area for years. He was formerly part of the staff at Isle Royal as part of the National Park Service. Then he moved inland, I like to think, right around the time I met him a few years back, and he was working at the National Monument in Grand Portage as part of the Park Service. And I believe he's retired now, but he goes on doing really important work. And I read some of his previous books about the history of the region, and I love them. So I haven't read this one yet, but I'm really ready to do it. The Making the Carry refers to the Linklaters. These are two individuals by the name of John and Chiquiwis Linklater, a married couple, both with indigenous background, family, ancestry. And so they have had really interesting lives back in the 1800s. And until about the 1930s, they lived kind of on the border of Minnesota and Canada up in the Boundary Waters and Quetico region. And a lot of people knew them up there. They were sort of famous in their own time. Chiquiwis specifically for... she was an amazing woman. Specifically, she was very well known to this day for her creations that were both utilitarian in an Ojibwe Anishinaabe tradition, as well as being very beautiful. Certain items that she made, she always seemed to have an extra eye towards creating something artistic, even though it often was objects that were for everyday use, like reed mats were on the floor, or different items that she would use for preparing food, stuff like that. And John, her husband, was well known for his ability to navigate all throughout that area, which was undocumented in many ways. And he worked a lot of times with naturalists and different U.S. agencies to track moose, to track wolves, to do different things. They needed data, and they would turn to John for that. He was really reliable that way. They had fascinating lives. And Christina points out in her review that many of us who live here don't know much about their lives, or have maybe never heard of them before. So this is a cool opportunity to find out more about what the world was like back then, as well as the fact that being of indigenous ancestry, Christina talks about the perspective of that as valuable as they were, they weren't maybe given the respect and the due that they should have been in their own time and even now. So it's a really interesting reflection on sort of that cross-cultural perspective and what race means in terms of how we value people in society.
So some very significant people who have been taken for granted and ignored for a century and more are finally getting some proper light shed on them, it sounds like.
Exactly.
Very good. It's long overdue, and I'm glad that he's done this thing. And moving on now to our next piece here, there is a vacant seat on the Lake County Commissioners, and so there will be a process for filling that seat, and that's being set up in the first district with the Lake County Commissioners.
You got it. So this will be an election upcoming to replace Pete Walsh, who had died on January 19th. He was incumbent and actively in that position. He had been elected more than once to hold that seat. And the unexpected passing of Pete had left an open vacancy since January 19th. And now the board has made some decisions about how to go about properly following it. There's always a process to follow, as you know, Tom, having been through some of those sorts of things with those two harbors, open seats that have existed unexpectedly. So in this case, it will be open for election for residents of the first district of District 1. And the first thing that has to happen, though, is we need to have somebody to elect. So the filing will open on May 17th. And that means people have to fill out an affidavit of candidacy if they want to run for that position. That's something that people can find by contacting the auditor's office in Lake County at the Lake County Courthouse and ask how they can get their hands on that. The affidavit of candidacy is also available online at the Secretary of State website. So people can search for that there as well if they're interested in running for that seat, if they are a resident of District 1, which is up near Finland Way and also includes the Fall Lake area as well. People would have to find a map to see specifically, obviously, where that lies, but that's the general situation. And then the filing stays open until May 31st at 5 o'clock. So and there's also a filing fee that goes with it. I know I'm getting a lot of details here, Tom, but I think it's really important for people to find out about this in case they are interested. I know all too often we don't have enough people aware of and then possibly interested in really important positions that for election. in our county in a lot of different areas. So that is open until the May 31st filing date that I mentioned. And then it gets interesting after that. And this will sound a little bit like a rerun for those of us who have been watching other elections. The very first election that will happen is already set for June 2nd. So this is a special election. The June 2nd election will either be the general election, if there are two or fewer candidates who file in the filing date. But if there are three or more candidates who file, the June 23rd election will be a primary with a general election then on August 8th. Those are a lot of dates and times to remember, but I just wanted to get people started being aware of that.
Oh, sure. And this is an important thing. I mean, it's part of our participation in how we are governed. And at the county level, the county board is analogous to the city council at the city level. So, I mean, they are your elected representatives, and they pretty much set the course in how the county is run. And so this is a big deal. So moving on, I suppose, we're talking about what you're calling biz buzz, and you're talking about Electroforge.
Right on. So this will just take a minute. I wanted to tell people, once again, we started doing a little write-up about every other week of local businesses in Lake County, because I think getting to know our neighbors and who's working for us and what our options are is pretty important. I got to meet the owner of Electroforge, Eric Schultz, and what a delight. This is a fun part of my job. I've seen Eric's truck around the county many times. He's a very spiffy truck with a really nice logo on it. And I've always thought, what is Electroforge? I don't understand what this is. And I got to find out. He does marine welding, so he works on all kinds of, all things boats that need welding. And he also, he does it all. He's basically the guy with the crew that has the equipment to weld, to repair, and to fabricate something unusual that you might need, either in aluminum, stainless steel, or steel. So he repairs logging truck equipment. He goes all over and works for breweries in Castle Danger right here in town, as well as down in Duluth, because he can weld stainless steel, which is super special. And on top of that, what I got to find out about Eric is he's a bit of an artist. In addition to having these great technical skills, he loves to be creative. He loves to do stuff that's just beautiful to look at. And I looked at some of his work online. He loves it when somebody comes to him and says, I need something made out of metal for this very oddball project because I have this one piece of wood that I want to display. And then he'll create something just gorgeous. So that's really fun. It's a get-to-know-your-neighbor kind of thing.
Excellent. It is an interesting thing that these metal workers like this who do custom welding do have a tendency to be artistic in three dimensions, you know, sculpture-type work, because that's a lot of what custom welding is actually it's sculpture, but with a particular attention paid to the quality of the joins in the metal. So, yes, I'm not surprised that he's a bit of an artist. I expect it, actually. Our final piece is your Lake County Press survey results.
Sure. This is a quickie, too, Tom. I know we're going a little long, but I just wanted to tell people that we heard you. I asked for surveys online to give feedback on our first year underway, and we got a great response. And the number one thing, we got lots of different comments. The number one thing that I heard was that people love that there's a new newspaper again in our area. So that was good to hear. And for corrective feedback, the number one thing I heard was add more news stories. And we've already started working on that. So I just wanted to let people know I heard what you said, and we've already put that into motion this week. Starting already, we're reducing some of our columns to being less frequent, and we're using those writers to cover more news stories, including sports and government events. So thank you, everyone, for that feedback. We appreciate it.
Very good. So you're putting the news in a newspaper. You bet.
You got it.
All right. Well, is there anything else that you're just struggling to contain?
Well, there's always more to the story, Tom, but I'll save it for next week.
Okay, very good. To our listeners at home, thank you for tuning in. We'll see you on the radio again next week. And to you, Kitty, as well, thank you, and bye for now.
Bye, Tom. Thank you.